Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Look, I'm just trying to be all right with it. Yeah, I'm just trying to be all right with it. Yeah. I'm just trying to see the light in it. I think we should take a ride with it. I'm just trying to spend the night with it. Yeah, I just want to be all right with it. Yeah.
As much as Matt couldn't make it in for the main episode, he had to make sure he talked about something this week. Otherwise, he was going to lose his mind. So we got a bonus episode for everybody. We're not talking about the same stuff we talked about in the main episode this week where we had Mark Dondero in, and obviously Tyler was there. You guys can go back and listen to that. We're going to talk about a couple interviews. So we had Leon Poe interview earlier in the week. If you haven't listened to that, pause this. Go back and listen to that. The other thing is Matt turned my attention to this, and I'm sure all the basketball fans out there have already seen this. Kobe Bryant was on the Knuckleheads podcast, and that's what, Quentin Richardson and Darius Miles, right, Matt?
Yeah, correct.
I got to be honest, I don't know, like, in terms of their voice, which is which. No clue.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I don't remember.
Did you watch the video?
Oh, no. There's a video.
Oh, so you just listened to the audio.
Yeah, I just listened to the audio. You watched a whole video?
Yeah, I mean, I think I could tell even if I didn't have the audio, but I was watching the video. But yeah, Darius Miles has the deeper voice.
Oh, okay, gotcha. All right, yeah. Then I know exactly which one he was. I mean, the voices are definitely different, but it's also convenient when it's like us where your voice is a million times deeper than mine is. Anyway, you're the one actually driving the bus on this one, so tell me
I thought the Leon Poe interview was actually pretty interesting. He was actually kind of he was funny, like you know me and you had talked about afterwards when I listened to it. He had a funny side to him, but my main points that I took away from that I thought was pretty good basketball related stuff was him talking about the role guys coming off the bench and the importance of role players in the second unit. I thought it was really good stuff, and like, you know, I know we've hashed it out and talked about how we don't feel like the NBA uses or really, you know, values that second role unit. But like, just the way he talked about like how he just saw them as a unit and like they were there to pick up the starters or keep a lead or, you know, get back into a game. So I just thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, they took pride in it. It's like with these guys, I didn't know Leon Poe could shoot threes. I mean, I don't know if he was as good of a three-point shooter as he says he was. But I have no way of proving that either way. But a guy who thought he could go and be something more swallowed the pill so he could go and win a title. And what happened? He won a title, and he got jobs after it because of that too.
Well, I think that goes back to last year's Celtics where guys weren't willing to do what that unit did.
Yep. Exactly.
And that unit was willing to sacrifice for the betterment of the team. And but I also think it was – I don't know if this is like – again, I hate saying like, is this the era of, you know, basketball? Is it like over where – like that story about Doc when he's like, you know, I'll sit your ass down near me if you want to shoot those threes.
Yeah.
Like is the era over of that? Because like I think that story shows why Doc is a good coach, because he was able to be like, hey, listen, this is your role. You're going to buy into your role. This is what I need from you. You know, for us to be successful. And I don't know if do NBA coaches do that anymore. Like, I feel like Brad Stevens' system is like, you know, Leon would be shooting threes.
I think, that's a good question. I mean, you look at how some of the guys talked about Popovich at Team USA. I wonder if they had heard that from him. Maybe not in that setting, but in a general setting, like on the Spurs. But then again, we see what happened with Kawhi and he wanted to leave. We still don't know specifics as to why he left. So maybe – you might be right, Matt. It might be the end of an era where that – or at least it's on pause. Because things like this, they're cyclical. It'll come back where eventually guys will buy into
the role. I hope so.
Yeah, it's how things tend to usually work. It's just – it will revert back to its like old way or what it was. I can't imagine you're never going to see it again, because somewhere someone's going to be like, well, no one else is doing this. If we do it,
Well, I mean, I think the successful teams in the league are doing it. That, I mean, I'm just saying, I guess I'm more talking about the Celtics currently, how they are now. I'm like the Toronto Raptors last year, to me, they had established roles for each guy, I think. At least you can see
I think it. With the Raptors, that's fair. I think with the Warriors, that's fair. I think when you look at the LeBron's teams, when he's won, that's fair. But the thing is that what I thought you were kind of trying to say is there are more teams, like more teams throughout the league in the past that had this, whereas now it feels like there's only a few teams that have that.
Yeah, okay, no. Yeah, I am agreeing. That's what I'm getting
to. Yeah, no, but when it comes to the Celtics, yes. I mean, this is tough for me to remember really well, but pre-Big Three, I don't know that those teams necessarily had guys that were like that. It was just a free-for-all, I felt like, when Antoine and Paul Pierce were together.
Oh, and that's why they were a bad team.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, that was the one thing I really wanted to make sure I hit on with him, because I feel like that's what Celtics fans want to see out of their guys. You had 8 really good players last year, 8 or 9. It's 9, wasn't it? If you count Baines, you had 9 guys, I think it's right. Baines and Tice. Why couldn't they go and make something work?
I mean, yeah, I just think it was the problem was the better players like Rozier and Morris, they like those guys just didn't want to sacrifice. They wanted theirs.
Morris was too good too early. I think that was a big problem.
Yeah, that was a problem too.
Yeah, but what else?
I mean, that's kind of really all I had. That, well, you know, that stuck out like basketball wise. I mean, I thought Leon was you know he was funny. He talked about his other experiences at other places, but to me, that was the two things that stuck out as a basketball standpoint for me for the Leon interview.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with that. He was definitely a lot looser than I expected him to be. I was happy with that.
I thought it flowed really well.
But I knew you wanted to get
the Kobe interview, man. I literally listened to it like twice. I thought it. What I think people, if people don't appreciate this, like Kobe's pretty deep, man. He's such a, like, he knows so much about basketball. I don't know, every time I'm, like, amazed by how, like, his brain, about his IQ about basketball. And it's why he's my favorite player. I think it just, I just relate to him on so many different levels. My first take was, which was crazy
before,
to me.
Before you get in your first take, just on a whole, I was amazed at how different this interview sounded as opposed to the one with A-Rod and Big Cat and the Corp. I enjoyed this so much more. Probably helps that it's two guys that he played with or played against solely, right? He never played with either of them. I think that helped, and he just – it felt more real. It didn't feel so much like business, Kobe.
I agree with that. It definitely was real. Maybe it is because he was talking to 2 ex-NBA players who played during his time. I think they also – that the 2 guys that hosted the show, Darius Miles and Q Rich, like I think they just – they did a nice job of you know, handling the interview and asking him certain questions that I thought were very interesting.
Yeah.
My first point was, I wrote this down. The fact that Charlotte said that, Charlotte Hornets that drafted him and said, we didn't really need you anyway. Like, can we talk about who the hell was the GM that said that to Kobe?
Oh, my God.
What a moron.
Yeah, we really wouldn't work with you.
Like, can you imagine if you came back out now and saying, like, the second best shooting guard of all time?
Yeah,
we don't need you.
That's like the worst oversight ever. It's one thing to think he's not going to turn into, I mean, I don't know, to think you're not going to need him. I'm just trying to, like, there's a certain line where it's okay that you made an improper estimation on Kobe Bryant, but that's just completely the worst thing you could have said. We don't need you.
Yeah,
sorry.
But it was cool because but that was what made Kobe great, is that like he got fueled by that, you know?
That
just set him off.
And then there was George Karl, that was another one too.
Oh, we're going to get to that. I wrote that one down, sure. the next point I had was what I thought was pretty, you know, unique. This is coming from a superstar in the league, but he didn't have the same path of what most guys have today, is like Kobe played behind guys. He played behind Eddie Jones and Nick Van Exel, and he said he learned how to practice hard and prove every day that he deserved to get on the floor. And I'm thinking about this, and I'm like, wow, that, you know, it's amazing. Like, this is coming from a guy who's literally, to me, I think you could argue he's one of the top 5 players of all time. That's a different debate for another day. But like, do guys in the league do that now?
I don't think so. I don't. I mean, I can't.
They don't. I mean, think about what guys come in the league. Like, how long did Tatum and Brown take until they were, like, playing starters minutes or legit minutes? You know? I just feel like rookies these days, like, they come in and it's like, boom, you know, you're already getting so many shots and so many this. And, like, a guy like Kobe Bryant saying, like, you know, guy, you know, he had to work for everything, and it made him appreciate, you know, what it took to be a better player, because he had veterans, you know, leading him. It was like and they said, it's like a grown man. It was like grown man's league back then. Like Kobe being 18 was like really young.
I do think that. I mean, I don't think these guys don't just walk in and roll the ball out and then they're there. But at the same time, I feel like if a guy's not close to being a starter when he gets drafted, he's viewed as a bust. He's viewed as someone who's just like, oh, it's not going to work. He's not going to really turn into anything much. If he's not like a fringe starter or starting right away, then it's just like, oh, what's the point? It's not really much to get excited about. That. So I guess in that same vein, like Kobe would have probably been viewed as, he's fine. You know, he's not that big a deal, but he's, you know, he's not bad, I guess.
I don't know. I guess I see it more like if you're a guy that comes in the league and you have to earn stuff, right? You're behind veteran guys. Like, you have to earn playing time. Like, I feel it just sets, like, a better culture. It sets, like, a better example. Like, because Kobe said, like, all these guys that come in the league now, you know, they set all these new records of, like, oh, fastest score this many points. But, like, you know, they're not really learning how to play the game. Like, you know, there's no older veterans. And, like, He also mentioned how it's, you know, it was a grown man's league back then. Like, there wasn't guys Kobe's age. Kobe was 18. You know, everybody else was like really grown men. Where now Kobe kind of said it's like college. Like, a lot of the guys are young. It's like a, you know, young man's league.
This is a product of having the one and done year after year after year, because now teams don't want to go and spend money on the old vets when they have the young guys. Why not just get the young guy, see if you can make it work? Whatever. That's why I still think that you're better off having the high school kids. They can go into the draft if they want to. It's going to be tough. It's not always going to work. Or you go to college and you have to go longer than 1 year. If that's 2 years like football or 3 years like baseball, whatever it is, I think it's going to end up paying off a little bit more, because you're just going to learn more. And then if you're a freak like Kobe, or pick whoever else, like Dwight, who was a freak out of high school or prep school, whatever, then, or KG, then they'll make it work and then they'll learn. But they'll have much older guys to deal with then, and you'll have more veterans in the league, and it will look different, like you said.
Yeah, and I think it's a better look. I also thought it was an interesting take. I wrote this down. Like, he talked about his recruiting process, like who the two top schools were if he was going to go to college.
Yep.
Duke or UNC. And what I thought was, obviously not like that he named those two schools, but what he liked about both of them was that Duke, with Coach K, was running offense ahead of its time, and he kind of let guys play. And, you know, maybe back then I didn't realize it, but now when you watch, it's definitely like he's still running the same type of offense. Like, he runs like an NBA-style offense where guys get to choose, you know, kind of get to play freestyle, freelancing. And, like, Dean Smith at UNC had like a system where, you know, players came in the NBA ready and more developed. So I thought, you know, he had two, like, he kind of had two choices that were totally different options if he did go to college.
Yeah, that was different. It's weird. Like, and you never, I don't know if he knew that at the time, or if he, like, it sounds like he knew it at the time. Clearly he knows it now. To be able to pick up, I mean, I'm sure he had help from his parents or whatever, his dad, because his dad obviously played at such a high level. But it's weird as a kid, like, you try and look at all those. Like, did you? I remember when I was going through the college, you know, athletics process and everything, looking at certain things. You know, with baseball, it's different than basketball in that regard. But did you look at that, like, in terms of? I mean, obviously, you're not thinking about playing. I don't know if you were thinking about playing overseas when you were going in. But do you look at anything like that? Do you look at the system, or what is it like when it came to your process?
Oh yeah, 100. I mean, 100. At least for me, for basketball. My dad said it, like, I couldn't have gone into a better system than what I went into, because at St. Joe's at the time, they were running, you know, like a Princeton-based offense, but it was, you know, for shooters. It was guys that could shoot. So for me, I think when I was getting recruited, I think it was important that, A, and this goes out to any kid that's, you know, a high school recruit looking at college, I think, A, you got to look at, you know, go to a practice, see what they practice like, see what kind of system they do run.
Definitely. That's for
and
any
B,
sport,
like,
yeah.
For me, I had a great relationship with the head coach. So I think those two things do, you know, they do are they are important. They go hand in hand. Like, you gotta be able to vibe with the coach, and you also have to be able to see what how he runs a practice and, you know, what kind of system and how do you see yourself fitting in.
Makes sense. That's what, like you have to, I think, I mean, sometimes it's tough with the coaches to figure out right away if it necessarily is going to be a fit, because when they're recruiting you, they're your best buddy always. When you get there, though, they can be very different. But when it comes to, like, practices and things like that, that's with any sport. Like, you absolutely have to see what it looks like, have to see, like, because if you don't go to a practice or a game, I think is just as important, too, to be able to self-assess and realize, can I hang with this team? Can I hang in this league? How are you going to know? But what else you got from Kobe?
So what else? I believe me, dude. This, I'm telling you, I was blown away by this. So many takeaways. I liked how Q Rich was talking about, like, how Kobe, like, he played in LA for 4 years. He never saw Kobe out.
That was crazy.
And, like, and it was like, and you called him, like, you know, the black Bruce Wayne and stuff, like, just because, like, you know, they joke because he used to take helicopters to the Staples Center because the traffic's so bad. But no, I just think that's why Kobe was great. And I truly believe that. It's just like he said it, like, he was obsessive, like, he obsessed about the game and he didn't want anybody outworking him. So I thought that was pretty cool.
I do appreciate the obsession. I do very much appreciate the obsession.
I liked how we talked about, like, how MJ didn't really share much with people. They were talking about, like, you know, would you share part of your games? And he said MJ would share stuff with him because he just, you know, MJ figured Kobe was, you know, he thought Kobe was cut from the same cloth. I also thought what was interesting was, you hear what he said about what he makes his daughter, the one that's his, I'm pretty sure it's
his. I can't remember which one was the basketball, which one was, like, the movie.
Oldest daughter.
Okay.
I can't remember her name, but it's the one that plays AAU hoops that, like, is loves basketball. But, like, he makes her do every, like, do stuff, like, eat right, brush her teeth with her left hand just to get that exposure to doing stuff with her left hand. I thought
when
that was pretty
interesting.
He said
that, I was like, that makes so much sense.
It does. Because he said, like, that's obviously being, you know, it's the whole cliche of you got to be able to, you know, go to your right, go to your left. You got to use both hands. But when you take it to that level, I thought it was pretty interesting. I've never thought about doing that, like, when I was a kid. I never thought about, like,
yeah, but it, and some people, and I'm sure there are some people who look at that and say, that's psychotic. You're doing that with, an 8-year-old? It's such a tiny thing that it's not, and it's not going to negatively impact their lives. Like, you want to say that's psychotic. I'd rather see somebody do that with a kid who wants to play basketball. Or is there really any other sport where you need to be ambidextrous like that? Really, only basketball, right?
I mean, soccer?
Yeah, but how are you going to do that with feet, right? That'd be kind of tough.
Switch
hitting doesn't really work that way. So,
I guess basketball.
Yeah, so basketball's the only thing. So, I'd rather see somebody do that, especially early on with a kid, than go and send them to a coach right away and say, hey, teach my kid all these things at 8 years old. It's like, no, this is a stupid little thing you can do. And it can make a difference. Mm-hmm. Clearly, because Kobe wouldn't have his daughter doing it otherwise.
I thought it was interesting, like, how he said he used to work on his game and that. And it made it, I'm telling you, all the stuff he was saying just made me realize, like, stuff that I do with kids now working out, I'm like, oh, maybe I'm doing some stuff wrong. He said, like, when he used to practice his moves, again, this is Kobe Bryant, like, when he used to practice moves, he wasn't so concerned about, like, what dribble move he was getting. It was about getting to a spot and just working on his pull-up jump shot, because he felt like no matter the reps, and I always say shooters need reps and reps and reps and reps, but he said, like, once he almost perfected his pull-up jump shot, it didn't matter who was guarding him, where he was guarding, because he could always adjust because he just had practiced it so much. You know, he could shoot over a tall defender. He could adjust midair and shoot it on the line. Like, I don't know. It was kind of a cool concept to think about.
So, you know,
again, he's 6'6", so I can see why I can shoot over.
Right, right. But, you know, if Kobe was listening to this right now, he'd be proud of you, because you're looking at all this and hearing everything he's saying, knowing somebody, like, for in his case, it was Michael. You have him in this instance. And he was always trying to learn, always trying to find ways to get better. You're looking at it as how you are as a coach and saying, well, how can, like, okay, am I doing this right? Am I doing that right? Or is that, like, somewhere am I making my mistakes? That's how, like, real athletes think. Is there, and it doesn't, you don't have to have played sports necessarily your whole life to do that. There are some people who are just competitive no matter what. They may not have an athletic bone in their body, but, like, that's how it works. Like, and if you want to go and do well in whatever the hell it is, if you like basketball and you listen to the show, but you want to go be the best, I don't know, cello player ever, like, that's how, that's the shit you got to do right there. Always find ways to learn from people. Always find ways to get better. You're never going to, because you're never going to be satisfied. Like, I just, it sucks sometimes, right?
Yeah. But no, it does. I mean, I think you just put that perfectly. Like, and I think that's why I was in awe when I listened to him speak. It's not like I'm not just sitting there going, oh, it's Kobe Bryant just talking. Like, I really go in depth about what he's saying. And, like, I try to reflect on either, A, how I felt. Like, I will get to a point where I talk about me and you playing high school basketball. But, and I'm telling you, bro, I was jotting down stuff. I was going to work.
I want to hear that. I'm excited about that.
I think what was interesting too, and I think MJ had said this, and I think it's important for anybody that listens to this pod that's still playing hoops, like, what changed Kobe's game, he said, is that, like, getting stronger and getting in the weight room, because he noticed one of his first, I think it was his rookie year or something, they were in the playoffs, and he just, or, you know, when you're coming from high school or going to college, you play way more games than you do in high school, so your body's more fatigued.
Yeah.
And he talked about, like, how it was really important for him to get his and me from a personal level. I think if you do hit the weight room, and again, you're not trying to get like a football player, but you just put on some muscle, strengthen. Yep. It changes your game, like, incredibly. It really does.
And for anybody who's like, if you're a basketball player and you play, I know there aren't many three sport athletes out there anymore. It's a friggin' shame, but if you do it for one sport. You got to do lower body stuff for all sports. If you do it for one sport, you're going to see the difference everywhere. If you do it right, I mean, I know. It's a fact. It's a fact. Like, you get that solid base, man, and you're training for basketball. If you go play soccer, you're going to ruin kids. I mean, it's just what it is. You know, it's what happened with us in high school.
Yeah, we're just athletes playing soccer.
But, like, there was a difference when we got to junior and senior year, because we were just a lot bigger than everybody else because we worked out. A lot of kids didn't, especially a lot of soccer players.
Yeah, they don't work out. Well, I wrote this point down, that, and you kind of already kind of hinted towards it about the George Karl thing. I never knew that.
No, I didn't either.
So I get, you know, if you guys didn't listen to it, Kobe always looked forward to facing MJ, especially in the All-Star game. And I guess that, you know, I remember the game, but I didn't remember George Karl didn't play Kobe for the fourth quarter. And Kobe said, oh, hell no. Like, you know, fans wanted him to get back in and everything. George Karl did not play him.
Yeah.
And I think that year he wasn't a starter in the league. So I don't know if that's why George Karl didn't play him in the fourth quarter. But Kobe said after that game, he's like, I'm going to make sure the Nuggets never beat me in a playoff series. George Karl never beat me in a playoff series.
I love that.
And I'll tell you right, he never beat him in a playoff series. That's why Kobe's the best, man.
I love that.
I also liked how they hit on the All-Star game, because I'm so in agreement. Like, it needs to be revamped. Like, they all three of them are in agreement. It just needs to be more competitive. It needs to be more competitive, and they got to do some of the dunk contests. Like, Kobe did the dunk contest. MJ did the dunk contest. I wish more of the superstars would do it.
Yeah. And the dunk contest,
you know, just take that pride.
The dunk contest one is an easier sell for me than the All-Star game. I would love it if they made the All-Star game great, but it just seems like, yeah, it's the greatest pickup game in the world, but that's the problem. It's still
Kobe said it should be.
Yeah, it should be.
But they don't play it. Like, he's like, dude, they play pickup harder at UCLA. That's what Kobe was saying.
If that's the case... If that is in fact the case with guys, they go hard in these pickup games. I mean, like, we saw Devin Booker. He doesn't want to go hard in pickup games. But if that's what these other guys do, and he's not exaggerating, then that's bullshit. Then they should be going harder. But if they don't...
Well, I think they should either way. Because it's a pointless event then.
It's just so tough because in the grand scheme of things, outside of pride, what does it mean? Now, I don't care if it's like now when we play basketball, it's just about pride, but we're also not making, you know, that kind of scratch.
I think guys back then played for pride.
See, because, okay, maybe I don't remember the games being
different.
That competitive.
I will say it was different.
What?
There is a difference. There has been a difference.
It was, okay, it's worse now than it was when we were kids, but when we were kids, I don't remember being that competitive still.
Well, I don't think it was competitive through three quarters, but when that fourth quarter came, people played in that fourth quarter. Okay.
All right.
Kobe said in the thing, he said him and Chris Paul have never lost an All-Star game when they've been on the same team, because in the fourth quarter, they'd be like, all right, let's jump on these guys.
All right. I'd rather see them do it for the slam dunk contest. I think it's more important.
But since you just brought up Devin Booker, I also liked how they brought up the Devin Booker pickup thing, double team. They asked Kobe, like, what would you do? What would you say if they brought a double team during pickup? And Kobe said, you better bring another one. You better bring three. But I thought it was, but you know, on a non-funny point, I think he made a lot of sense about, and I was like, why would Devin Booker complain about a double team? If you're getting doubled in the regular season, why not work on your game?
Yeah.
And figure out how to beat double teams. Like it didn't make sense to me. I don't know. It didn't make sense. Like why now looking back at the Devin Booker thing, like why would you do that?
I understand wanting to get work move. Against the guy one on one, but if that like you always want to practice in a game setting if you can. Like that's the one of the few things I took from basketball originally applied it elsewhere. Because I remember Ray. I think I saw a video recently actually of Ray Allen talking about it. He said people will take shots and they just shoot like not at game speed, rather they just, you know, dribble, shoot, dribble, you know, take a jab step, shoot. He's like, and that's how they get loose or whatever. He's like, if I'm getting loose and I'm not gonna go full speed, I'm gonna take free throws. I think that's how he would warm up, because obviously it's a lot more casual that way. But that's like game speed, and then you go from there, and then every shot he takes is boom, catch, shoot, boom. Like every time. It's just what Ray does.
Pretty spot on right there. You want game reps. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter when you're playing pickup. You want game reps. And if you get double teamed during the season, you should want to practice against that 100%. And learn how to beat it.
100%.
So I get a few more points before we get going. But I also thought what was pretty cool was Kobe saying, when he used to go to the Madison Square Garden, you know what he tried to be like? Like what character he would try to be like?
I don't remember that part, no.
So he Kobe watched a lot of the filming of The Dark Knight, Heath Ledger, and what Heath Ledger would do to get into that Joker role.
Why so serious?
Well, but you know what I'm saying? Like, you know how Heath Ledger didn't talk to anybody? Where's like Rachel? He like So he, Kobe she? Said that he would
Sorry, go ahead.
He would try to do that. He would try to do that, like play that role when he went to Madison Square Garden. That's why he always had like huge games. Like he said, he would just get into that character of just like not talk. He wouldn't talk to anybody.
So he was a method actor. So he's basically Jared Leto.
Pretty much, bro. Like I thought that was pretty crazy. And I'm like, why would he do such a thing? And then I'm like, well, he did score like 60 points.
His life's much easier than Heath Ledger's was. Not Jared Leto's Joker sucked, though. Anyway, sorry, I'm not trying to take away from your point. I do appreciate that.
But that's why he's the best. I mean, that's why he was like a natural killer. Like, he just, he thought of ways to destroy you.
Yeah, because you're going against the Knicks, and it's like, okay.
Well, it's more like he's playing at Madison.
But that's what
I
mean. He went and took a situation where it's like you're playing the Knicks, but you're in you're in Madison Square Garden. Yeah. You're in the Mecca.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm going to come in, and I'm going to show everybody, like, hey, guess what? This may be the mecca of basketball, but I'm the freaking king. This is my domain. But he was like a villain. Or I guess he wanted to tear it down. I don't know. Something like that. You get my point.
Yeah, I get your point. All right. So the last point I got, and I thought it was the best part of the whole show. So I saved
the best for last. Bearing the lead.
Was, did you hear the part where he talked about kind of him and Shaq, but also like what he talked about triangle offense?
I remember him bringing it up. I remember him talking about Shaq. I cannot remember. I can remember a little bit about how he talked about the offense. I think I do remember this a little bit. I can't remember the specifics. Okay. So I'm not gonna.
So the Shaq part's quick, but I think, you know, it's what I've been saying is that Kobe needed to be without Shaq and Shaq needed to be without Kobe. I think that's why they split, because they both wanted to prove, and Kobe said this point blank. He said, I didn't want at the end of my career to people be like, oh, you only did this because of Shaq.
And I understand
And he said, it's not fair. But at the same time, like he said, he's glad that he had Shaq, but he's glad that he proved that he was a great player without Shaq. Because they still hold it over his head for those three. But, you know what I'm saying? Like he said at that time they both needed to be separate. Like they both needed to prove that they could win without the other.
See,
which is, again, it sucks because you wish that they played through, you know, together forever. But that's how it is.
Part of me doesn't because they were still Lakers. Like, I don't forget. I don't ever lose sight of that.
That's true.
But, that's when people talk about Brady and Belichick, and it's like, oh, you know, one of them's got to see what happens when they don't have the other. Like, Brady's going to leave at some point, or Belichick's going to hang on when Brady retires. And I'm just like, I don't know. If that was me, I would just be like, who cares? We win all the time. Who gives a shit? No one has a chance against us.
I think it's more of a basketball thing than a football thing, I guess, is with that, you know, when you compare those two.
I
don't know. I think, like, basketball players, like, you know, if you're Brady, you still need a defense and you need special, you know what I'm saying? There's three phases that, and two of them you're not even involved in, where basketball, you're involved in every play, pretty much. And so I guess,
yeah,
you know, it's ego. It's a lot of things.
Yeah, it's a lot. But anyways.
Yeah, so what the best point about the triangle offense, what I thought was like really fascinating, I think from a coaching standpoint, I want to read a book. There's a book about the triangle offense. I want to read more into what it was all about. But Kobe said, like, the triangle offense gives you structure, but also allows you complete freedom. Yes. It counters, and there's always counters to whatever the defense is doing. So clearly, obviously, if you're going to run triangle offense, you need really smart players. But there's structure to it, but there's freedom. And he said, and this is what I think the best point was, he said players these days play accidental offense, which was, I thought, and then when he explained what accidental offense is, he said it's, you know, guys penetrating and just kicking and hoping, and, you know, guys take shots and you just hope, well, they may make it, they may
Russell
miss,
Westbrook.
but they don't play with a purpose.
Right. Yep.
Right. So like when Kobe and all them played in the triangle offense, they had a purpose. They had a structure. They knew what he says in the video. They knew what, you know, the Utah Jazz, how they were going to defend certain things. So they'd have purpose, structure to counter what they like to do. So it just makes so much sense now in the league when you see guys. Most teams play. They really do just try to drive, kick, shoot
That's
a three.
What it
you know
is.
What I'm saying?
That's
like,
what it is all the time.
Yeah, but I thought it was cool. He called it accident. Him and he said him and Phil. They call it accidental offense. So yeah. I thought it was a pretty interesting take. And what I wanted to bring up about the high school thing was I remember this game, and it just shows you that, and I tell this to kids all the time, that basketball is a simple game, right? You don't need to be fancy. You don't need to do anything crazy. Do you remember that game we played Bishop Conley?
I knew exactly this was a game you're going to bring up.
Right? And
it's
your
favorite game to bring up when it comes to the two of us.
Because it just makes so much sense is that we – in that game, we want to talk about purpose, is that we just played offense. It wasn't like some ridiculously drawn up play.
Oh my god.
It was the simple thing of just space, like me putting people in the positions to succeed, right? Like,
yep.
And they had like this big center and he was guarding you. So I said, all right, me and Nick are gonna run a 2-man game. I put Chris in the corner, Chris Rosa. He was a 3-point shooter for us. You know, and I had like Josh and Adam doing something on the other side of the floor, and we just kind of toyed with the defense. Like, you know, I would come off, the first couple times I'd hit you and you got a layup, right? And then they guard different. Then they're switching, and so now the big guy's on me. Then I would score, and then maybe the guy from the corner would help, and I would drive and kick it to Rosa, and Rosa would have and he hit two open threes. So it was just, when I think about that, I don't know for you, but for me, when I think about that and I describe basketball, I'm like, it's really not that complicated. You just have to see how the defense is playing you, and you need guys that, you know, again, you are willing to set screens and roll and go to the rim. Rosa was willing to sit in the corner and wait for me to, you know, give him the pass that he needed. So I thought, like, that was what was fun playing with that team that we had.
So first of all, with that one, if I remember it correctly, I feel like we ripped off like three, maybe four baskets right away off the pick and roll, and it was
in a row.
Yeah, you
in
were
a row.
Just you and me, And then after that, we started, like, it was just, it was child's play. It was like, I think by the time we got to halftime, it was such a blowout because they just couldn't stop us. And the first game, or the other time we played them, it was a closer game. We didn't do the same thing. But the one thing that always came up when it was our high school stuff was how many friggin' plays we had. And
that was ridiculous.
I mean, for those who aren't, Westport Basketball High alumni, we had, we had a 1-3-1 defense, another defense that was a 1-2-1-1 that was called the Amoeba. We had a 3-2, a 2-3, man-to-man, half-court press. Then we had a 1-3-1 press, a 2-2-1 press. There was a hard 2-2-1 press and a soft 2-2-1 press, and there was a bit of a difference. Then there was a 1-2-1-1 press. So that's 10
things. I don't even know how you remember all this.
That's 10 things for defense. And then on offense, I'm not going to be able to get all of this, but I think we roughly had 7 offensive plays. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah.
So it was definitely no less than 5. I want to say 7.
But let me ask you a question. How many offensive plays did we run in that game that scored as much as we did just doing that?
And that's what I was going to get to is when it comes to especially high school basketball. I mean, Matt's the coach here, but just in general, I feel like with any athlete, you find out the things that work for you. You're going to have a few things that you are exceptional at or that you can be exceptional at. Figure out how to make those work and get it so that you're at that point where it's like second nature. Figure out where it works with the other guys. And then you, like you said, you read the defense, you see what they're giving you, and then you work off that. If you have 3 things you're good at, there's bound to be one thing that they're not trying to defend against. And then when they defend against that, then there's something else. Then if you run and pick and rolls, then it's like, forget it.
Well, that's what we did, and that was how simple basketball could be. Like, you know, anybody that was watching that game, they could have been like, wow, they're running great offense. Like, well, I wonder what play. We didn't run any play.
No
plays. We just talked between the 5 of us because we were pretty, it was a fun group to play with. But we just worked well off each other and we were willing to – like, could I have come off that screen and just try to force anything? No, I was just reading what the defense, gave me. And you had a good game. Rosa had a good game. It just – like, to me, that's how basketball should be played. And if you're willing, again, to play with measurement, like he said, like structure, but also, we played free.
Mm-hmm.
In that game,
we did. We played free a lot of times. When we had a unit that we were friends. I mean, that made a big difference too.
And willing to sacrifice it because that again, we talk about role players.
We had a lot.
That's what it was about, man. That's what it was.
We had distinct roles. That's for damn sure. And I loved it. I liked it that way. Like that's. Like,
I know. Me too.
See, that's why. I mean, look. I know it's a different level, and I know it's like we're talking about a guy who could maybe go and make. Like, I don't know what Leon Poe's contract for. You can go and look it up online. But, like, I'm saying just for anybody. But let's say he, as a role guy, was making, like, $3.5 million. And if he goes and be a superstar or is, like, a B-level player, maybe he's making, I don't know, $7 million. Like, I understand that that's important. But personally, I don't know. I just always felt like if you could go and know what your role is night in and night out, like, I got to guard the best guy. I got to go and make sure that I grab 10 rebounds and get all the loose balls, all that stuff. Like, I don't know. To me, that was always fun. Like, I just never felt like you have to be the alpha all the time. But maybe.
Yeah, and I think that's what makes good teams.
Yeah, have those guys and you just.
People looked at us before our senior year and said, we're going to be an okay team at best because they just looked at it on paper. But you didn't realize, like, people were willing to play certain roles. And when you're willing to play certain roles, that works. You're going to beat teams that have better talent that don't want to sacrifice, that want to play for themselves.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like that's how it is, man. That's life.
That's the beauty.
And I think that's the beauty of basketball.
If only we could have done what nobody else did at our school with beat freaking Cathedral. God. There are definitely some games I look back on that and I'm like, wish I could have done a few things differently. But that's how like it was for us in every single sport. Because we were like right there, right at the tip, and then just, nope, not happening. For those who care, and if you're still listening to this episode at this point, Matt and I lost in our senior year in the South Sectional Finals in Massachusetts in basketball and in soccer. And then in baseball, we lost in the South Sectional semifinals, and that was in extra innings. So it's just freaking torture. But anyway,
but we had some pretty good teams, brother. That was
we
fun.
Had some good teams. We beat some good ones too along the way. Just whatever. Anyways, I'm
three,
getting annoyed.
Three sport athletes.
Yeah, multi sport athletes. I can't believe it took us this long to bring this stuff up. Anyway, we will
good
have.
Episode, though.
What was that?
Good bonus episode.
We will have at least one other bonus episode next week. I can guarantee you that. I'll give you guys a little tease since you stuck around this long. It's going to be with a guy who is a professional athlete, doesn't play basketball, but was recruited by Brad Stevens to play at Butler.
Interesting. Interesting to hear this one.
So we will talk to you guys again next week.
What it do, baby?
Yeah. I'm just trying to be alright with it. Yeah. I'm just trying to be alright with it. Yeah. I'm just trying to see the light in it. I think we should take a ride with it. Yeah. I'm just trying to spend the night with it. Yeah. I just want to be alright with it. I'm just trying to see the light in it. I think we should take a ride with it. Hey, I got no resolutions. I'm just hoping for some change.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.